We are live with a new episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraum. How's it doing this week, Seth?
Good. I got a new camera set up with an unannounced product that we're going to talk about on 9 to 5 Mac next week. But if the video looks better, that's why.
That's why, though, I would put a note that's also maybe your network, too, which will be better.
But also, the network's better.
Yeah, so not a perfect comparison, but yeah, you definitely look sharper this week. All right, so let's dive right in because we have a ton of stuff to talk about this week. We're going to start with, we have a question here. Let's start with, we have a bunch of questions, and two of them here appears to be the same thing. One from Callum Burnett and one from Jonathan Brett. It's about the Q3 numbers. So I know that last quarter, I had 20 different leaks in a row about the Q2 numbers, which ended up being records for Tesla in terms of deliveries. And I have nothing so far this quarter, and that's not my fault. It's Tesla has been cracking down on those leaks a lot, and they've been reducing the number of people having access to the delivery numbers. So we don't have nothing else right now. We do have a few things that we're going to talk about during the show, but that points to Tesla still having to do a delivery rush, a big delivery push at the end of the quarter, as they usually do. So, however, and they do seem to have a target in mind. We don't even know what that target is exactly. If we are venturing into the speculation, I wouldn't be too surprised that they would be aiming for the big milestone of 100,000 deliveries. That would be hard to achieve, but not impossible in my opinion at this point, at this stage of Tesla in terms of production, and in terms of demand too. Because one of the big factor I think we could see here, and I think Callum Burnett mentioned it with Hindenburg, the UK, the right-hand drive market could make a big difference this quarter. We hear big numbers from Australia. We hear big numbers from the UK. So between that, between the stabilization of demand for the Model 3 in Europe and continued strong demand in the US and in Canada now with since the last two quarters, there's the new federal rebate, new federal incentive. Tesla is still in a very great position, in my opinion, even though in the U.S. there's been the losing of the federal tax credit. Well, there's still some credit right now, right?
Yeah, I think there's 1825 or whatever.
Until the end of the year?
Yeah, 1875, I think, is in the U.S.
Yeah, so not much, but still a little.
Yeah, it's something. And there's, you know, various states, California.
Yeah. All right, so now let's dive into the stories of the week. We start with Tesla V10. Last weekend, we posted the first official release notes for the quite massive upgrade, really. And so let's just go into them pretty fast here, just for what we already knew was coming. First off, if there's a theme to this update, the theme is fun. Like Tesla is really trying to make the car experience more fun, which I know it's bugging some people, like no pun intended, but because of some bugs that there is in the user interface, and people would like Tesla to focus on that instead of new features that are not core features, like this one here, which is Cuphead Tesla Edition. Tesla is adding to the Tesla Arcade a new game. The game is Cuphead, which very like a hit game of the season. I'm not familiar with it too much, but it's like a cartoon, kind of classic run and gun action game.
Do you think people are buying Teslas to just for the game?
No, of course not. But it's a great marketing tool, though. Like every time Tesla posted like a video, like they normally when they launch a new game, they post a little video nowadays, like they did with the chess game, they did with the racing game. It's like a commercial, but of course Tesla is not buying commercial time for it. But they release it on social media, and those videos are hitting millions and millions of views. So it is a marketing tool for sure. Yeah, Tesla Theater is the bigger deal here. It's still within the Fun team, though. So it was already announced by Elon Musk, Netflix, YouTube, basically video playback support, and they built from the premium the Chrome version of Netflix and YouTube on Chrome. They built it into like an app for Tesla, and we saw a video demonstration of it. We posted from it's down now. No, never mind. Mr. All Electric on YouTube posted a demonstration of it, and it looks quite refined, really. Like it's it's not surprising since it's based on Chrome, but it works very well. It looks like it works very well. So I get what Elon was saying when he was hyping it up with the whole great video experience inside the car. I mean, it is a pretty large train. You are in fairly comfortable seats, and you have a full surround sound audio. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the windshield on the Model X. Like it's kind of one of those things you have to be in to appreciate. But like everybody who gets in it is always like, oh wow, that's something that I heard about. Didn't seem like a big deal, and then they try it, and it's like, oh wow, this is something totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course the usability though right now would be somewhat limited, I think, as in the release note, they do say that they do confirm what Elon has already announced, which is the fact that it's going to be only working on Wi-Fi. They say that in the specific release note, which are for the early access program, that it's going to work on the cellular network, but it sounds like that will just be for the early access program. Once it's a wider release, it's only going to be in Wi-Fi. And of course, it's only going to work on Park. So the idea is like the most used would be when you're parked charging somewhere, but then you need Wi-Fi access when you're charging at those places. There is not always Wi-Fi access. There's some supercharger that like close enough to whatever restaurant or cafe in the area where you can access their free Wi-Fi. But
yeah, and you can use the Wi-Fi on your phone or a MiFi as well. Although yeah. I don't know how good of a stream Netflix you're going to get on AT&T's network.
Yeah, that depends on your network for sure. But Elon said that they will deploy their own free Wi-Fi at supercharger station. It's just that I wouldn't hold my breath for that. We know how Tesla is kind of slow to deploy those things when it's physical installation needed. So, but eventually you can see a use for that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, all supercharger stations already have a network connection. You don't know how fast, but they need to communicate with the mothership just to make sure to tell how much charging is going, which account. But funny thing is, like somebody was saying, I can't remember where, but maybe in the comments, that is this going to bring back like drive-in culture where like, back in the day, maybe the 70s or 60s or whatever, everybody would take their car and go out and watch a movie and, theoretically some romance involved. But, you could take your Tesla up to a nice viewing spot, turn on your Wi-Fi and watch a nice Netflix movie with your significant other. Might be something to do.
Maybe yeah, I can see that.
New activity.
Yeah. Could be interesting.
I mean, you have two comfortable chairs, a really good sound system, a very, very nice display. I don't know. Might be a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next one, karaoke. Starting with karaoke. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's a word and play on words.
Wordplay.
And looks again, same thing. All Electric posted the version of the early access program, and it looks fairly refined. It looks pretty good. You again limited to when you're parked because not limited where you park. You can actually use it, I think, when you're driving around. But I mean, what's important with a karaoke is to see the lyrics coming, I think. And they do have a really like legit karaoke system where there's the line that show you when your lines is coming and everything, not just the lyrics. There's the whole setup for it. That says only when you're parked, because I assume Tesla doesn't want you looking at the screen when you're driving. So that limits a little bit the usability of the app.
Which I think is kind of a shame because that would be a lot of fun on road trips.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But like, I'm trying to, like, would it be justifiable? Like, is it too much of a distraction? I don't know.
Yeah.
It would be fun for when Tesla actually released, of course, full self-driving capability. Then you really see that as a step towards that. Not just that, but also the Tesla Theater thing.
Right.
Of course, like, that's the dream. Like, you can just put the destination in your car and just either go to sleep or watch the movie. Tesla says it's coming as soon as next year, but of course we are a bit skeptical about that stuff. The rest is mainly the Tesla, the visual driving visualization changes. So we've been reporting on that for a while, like the whole zoom and rotate thing that change. Not that big of a deal, really. But there are some other changes to where the surroundings of the car too. So you're going to be able to see more pickup trucks, for example, are now rendered. Doesn't change much, but whatever. The angles that the cars are coming in is also more representative of the actual environment. That's nice, because I mean you're not supposed to be watching that driving visualization much. But I think it's a great tool for building confidence into Autopilot, because the renders is supposed to tell you what Autopilot sees. It's why I have some issues when there's like very weird bugs where the car just shakes around for no reason or whatever. Like, it looks like there's motorcycle dancing around you for no reason sometimes. That bothers me a lot, because I think that's the biggest thing about the driving visualization, is that it shows what Autopilot sees, and that's a confidence builder. Where it's a little bit more useful, it's with the automatic lane change, and they did change the driving visualization for that. When you do a lane change, now they do show the position where the car will end up on the lane you're changing into. Not that big of a deal, because like it's pretty like straightforward. When the car starts moving, you're going to end up where it is in the next lane, but give you an idea. I know you don't. Well, no, you do use Autopilot more in your Model X, right?
Yep.
I'm having an issue lately that I don't like, where when I'm changing lane, I'm Autopilot, I'm changing lane automatically with or without, well, I don't actually, without navigating Autopilot, because I'm the one initiating the lane change.
Mm-hmm.
I look at my, like, I look at my blind spot, I look on the right lane, I feel like I have plenty of space. I just passed the vehicle, right? And I'm moving back into the right lane. And I feel like I have enough space in my on my right, and I initiate the lane change, and
it doesn't do it.
Not only doesn't do it, it flashed the line red, telling me like that there's a car in my blind spot, even though like I can see that it's way back, like it would be perfectly safe to pass. And when it does that, not only it doesn't do it, and it flashed the lane red, it slows down. Huh. For no reason, it starts slowing down, which I don't like, and I find somewhat dangerous, because maybe there's another car behind me. Like, especially if I'm passing someone and going back into the right lane, that's normally because I want to keep the left lane clear for people driving faster. And if I slow down in the middle of doing that, also it makes changing lane even more difficult, because now that the car slowed down automatically, I'm back closer to the car that I just passed, and now I cannot change lane because I'm either too close to it or I'm right next to it. So it comes to the point where when I do my automatic lane change, I have to wait until like I see like two or three car space more than normal than I will normally do my automatic lane change. It's not fun.
Yeah, you know, I don't use the lane change too much. I kind of use autopilot as like traffic aware cruise control. Usually when I have the Model X, I have the kids in the car, so I'm not as I don't want to say daring, but just as experimental. So I haven't tried that in a while, although that does not sound good.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe it's a bug introduced in a recent.
Well, I did experience it before. It's just like the latest one, and I did try to change my aggressiveness of lane changes, but I'm not sure if that's only applies to navigate autopilot. If it's also like just for any automatic lane change, because it's definitely not when I use navigate autopilot, because I'm the one activating it. Though that you can also activate lane change when you are navigate autopilot.
Hmm.
All right, those feeling lucky and hungry buttons are actually there in the update. When you go to enter a location in your navigation system, normally in the current version you see home and work, and now you have also hungry and lucky, which are gonna bring you to a local restaurant or a local like tourist location or something, and. Yeah, well, Elon did mention that it's going to be a hit or miss for a while, but it sounds like they want to do some kind of machine learning stuff to improve it and everything. So
yeah. I have a prediction about this. In the first few weeks, at least, it's going to be Tesla meetups. So, like, if it says, you know, the burger joint down the street is a good spot, like, all the Teslas are going to want to try it. All the Tesla folks in the area are going to try it, and they're all going to end up at the same burger place.
And then now you're going to blow up those businesses that like you don't want to, you know, those type of places. Oh, let's not tell everyone that place is right. Good.
Exactly. And then all your favorite places are going to turn into huge lines and everybody's going to hate Elon again.
But that's not the only improvement. Well, if you can call that an improvement to the navigation and map system, there's a much more interesting one, which now on the map directly, if you click on the business, not only if you click on business, but if you're searching some business in the navigation system too, you get a lot more information about them. You get like a review information. There's a whole pop-up of information that comes with it that's similar to Google. I have to assume that you're probably getting that information from Google too. And you can also call it from that pop-up. So if you need to call the business, the car's going to call it from that pop-up. So that's pretty good. Sentry mode improvement, some interesting ones here where there's a separate folder now for sentry mode versus just the Tesla cam. The Tesla cam folder. Normally your sentry mode footage video clips will end up in a Tesla cam folder. Now there's a separate one for sentry mode. So that's nice. And also sentry mode will delete the older clips when there's enough space on your drive. So you don't need to keep deleting footage on your drive if you don't need to, which is nice too, because it gets if you often park your car in like in the city or something, you get a lot of clips really quick, and some people need to watch all of them, which is kind of crazy. But normally what I do if I'm parking, like I'm going to a restaurant in town or something, and I know I'm gonna have a lot of I just, when I go back to my car, if everything is fine, I'll just delete that footage. But now I could just leave it there and it will auto delete after the next time. So that's pretty useful. Joe mode. So that's something also that Elon announced. I think it was also something that an owner suggested on Twitter and Elon implemented, where all the chimes in the vehicle are quieter if you activate Joe mode. So if you feel like the chimes are a little bit too aggressive in a Tesla car, you can activate that. Software updates improvements. So now you're going to have, you're going to know what software updates you're getting before downloading it, which now that I read it out loud, I feel like that should have been there a while ago. But yeah, I mean, to be fair, Tesla is like the pioneer here in software upgrade inside vehicles. So, like they've
kind of had feeling lucky on software for like 5 years now.
So. Yeah, and of course it created some issues with some of the more hardcore fans, especially like in the early days of Autopilot. If you guys remember back in 2015, 16, where Tesla started implementing a lot more Autopilot nags, like all the alerts and things. Yep. So when the word started coming out that, oh, the new updates has more nags, then some people that were just, oh, okay, then I'm not updating. But of course, Autopilot also got a lot better at the same time. So you wanted the new updates. So you ended up compromising and getting that nag at one point. Finally, the application launcher, of course, we just talked about a bunch of new features. So they also integrated that in the app launcher. Like instead of having Tesla Arcade in there, now they add an entertainment one app that you can launch. And in that entertainment app, you have both the Tesla Arcade and the new there's a theater. In that release that we posted on Sunday morning, there wasn't any Smart Summon, but Smart Summon ended up coming out later in the week. So now it's there for the people that do have the FSD package. And it's apparently shows a little bit of improvement. It should come to a wider release, I think, sometime next week, Elon said. So we got to have more on that for you next week. Nothing on the music app, though. Elon has been promising some music app updates coming in V10. There was nothing in those release notes.
Yeah, it's been quiet on that for a while. I mean, they were looking at their own streaming service for a while.
For a long time.
Yeah.
But then more recently, Elon even basically said that Spotify is coming to North America, too, and nothing there yet. Though I have to assume, well, first of all, everything is there to make it happen. Like, Tesla doesn't need to put a lot of man hours to make that work. I have to assume that it's just a licensing issue, and Tesla still has a contract with Slack or whatever. So, I did hear something that some people were just lost their Slacker account this week, though.
Yeah, there was some weird Slacker stuff, and then I feel like there was another thing where Slacker announced it had lost some big contract or a big long-term contract. I forget where it was from. I just saw it in passing. So,
oh yeah, maybe, well, I didn't see that. Well, that would be telling, because I think the last time that the last earnings call for Slacker's parent company, they did say that 80% of their revenue coming from Slacker was coming from Tesla. So
right, or like one source, and we assumed it was Tesla.
No, I think they did confirm it was Tesla.
Did they? Okay. Yeah. So back to the Sentry Mode stuff. You know, this isn't on a post or anything, but I kind of feel like Tesla's next hardware update has to include at least, you know, something to make the USB ports on the Tesla a little bit easier to deal with, because now you've got USB hard drives. You've got, because you want to store all your Sentry and your camera data.
Mm-hmm.
You have game controllers because you've got all these video games.
Yeah, right.
And you've got, you know, you're charging your phones. I feel like, you know, that Jetta product that you have, I feel like that kind of thing has to be integrated into a future hardware.
Yeah, yeah, hardware. That's a good product, really. Like, and you need for sure a USB hub. The Jetta product is very expensive for USB hub, but of course it's custom made for the Model 3, and I still have the people complaining about the price and everything, saying that it's a money grab from Jetta, and I don't agree with that. Like, the making a custom mold and for manufacturing and things like that, it's very expensive. So they have to of course, the cost of the actual manufacturing of it, it's certainly not $90 that they're paying for you. They probably cost them $20 max produce that, and I'd be surprised. But they have to recuperate the tens of thousands of dollars and they invested into making that mold and everything that comes with it. But you can definitely buy just a regular USB hub and for $15 and still get to plug everything that you want. It's just that it's a much cleaner solution. And there's also the argument about hiding that hard drive in case of actual break-ins. I'm not sure or not if it's that big of a deal, because it is hidden for sure, but it's not that hidden. I mean, it's a magnetic thing. It's not. It's pretty good, but it's not a perfect solution either. Yeah, I think not only Tesla needs to change their I/O, basically, that's what you're saying, that they want, you should have more USB port. I think you should integrate the whole thing, like you wouldn't even need to have a hard drive. There should be an integrated hard drive inside there, and they should be over Wi-Fi. You should be able to watch your footage and everything.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be hard drive. And and to your point about the people stealing the thing, I think eventually, with 5G wireless and all this other stuff making high speed streaming very inexpensive, I think eventually it'll be like Nest or Amazon or Logitech having streaming, cloud connected cameras. Basically, your Tesla will be just streaming your Sentry Mode incidents into the cloud. So if somebody breaks into your car and smashes your dashboard, or even tows it somewhere, you're going to have all that footage in the cloud. So it theoretically, they can't get the data, no matter where you hide, you know, no matter what you do with a hard drive, somebody's going to be able to follow the wires to it. But if it's streaming to the cloud, there's no way they can get their hands on that footage. So, I mean, that's kind of the thought with the cloud cams in the home. Mm-hmm. Eventually it's going to be like that with cheap wireless.
Yeah, I get that though. I'm not sure that, well, yeah, maybe for a stationary car, because the 5G, the issue is that you'd like, you need to be within this like direct sight of an antenna. So 5G is for cars. I don't know if like it would be worth investing into having a 5G connection inside a car.
Yeah. I just wonder, like, carrying around a hard, well, I guess no, they probably wouldn't do a hard drive. They'll probably do an SSD, like that Samsung you have. Mm-hmm. But like, I just wonder if that's like, you know, Tesla's thinking short or medium term, like that, at least 2 or 3 years, or they're just kind of like, let's just wait for the networking to get better. And we'll, you know, wait for the Iridium replacement that SpaceX is doing and wire it all to space.
She did say SpaceX CEO or president, Gunnin Shotwell, she did say that it is unlikely to Tesla, that Tesla ever going to have like a satellite connection inside the car. She still said like it's like a pizza size receiver that they're going to have for that Starlink thing.
Pizza size?
Yeah, pizza box size, something like that.
Huh.
All right. For V10, there's also an update to Autopilot itself. Like, there's no, it wasn't in the release note, but Elon said that there was some neural net improvement. So we're going to see some general performance improvement for Autopilot. And I did post an interesting video that's now it's been taken down from a guy in Los Angeles that got the update in early access. And the guy has been testing his same commute, like he has a 40-minute commute in Los Angeles over 3 highways. And since getting the update, he did one, and he basically did one with zero driver intervention. Now, that article was very controversial, apparently, because the guy was using a weight on the steering wheel, which, of course, I don't recommend. I made that clear in the article. I also even implied that there's some legality issues to it, because NHTSA did shut down some alert defeating device like that, previously known as the Autopilot body. Yet some people wouldn't even want me to post the article as if I'm posting how to make a bomb or something here, which is of course the only thing I'm promoting. And I'm not promoting is like thing like that's good. I'm not promoting it. I'm definitely publicizing it. But let's get honest. Everyone know like you can put a weight on the wheel and it's gonna affect the Autopilot torque sensors. I mean, we've been talking forever about what was the orange trick or something.
Yeah, you just shove an orange in the spaces, or a piece of clay or anything heavy. Like, it's not hard to defeat.
Yeah, so I don't think it was news to a lot of people. The only thing I said is that why it's interesting that he did put the weight on it is that it's easier to show that there's no driver intervention, because, I mean, normally you would have to put your hand on it when you're driving. I think you should have your eye when you always have my hands on the wheel when I'm driving on Autopilot. But because of the alert system on Autopilot, you would have to grab the wheel and apply some torque. And so if you're just watching the video, it's not as easy to determine enough if there was driver intervention. So that's it. But what was actually interesting with the video wasn't that, like, that's not interesting. The guy is being somewhat irresponsible, although I would argue that having your hands on the wheel is not as important as paying attention. Paying attention is definitely more important and being ready to take control. Now, there's, of course, a delay. If you don't have your hands on the wheel, that's where it becomes somewhat irresponsible. Now, what was interesting is that the actual commute had 3 highways, so 2 interchanges. One of them was an HOV lane to an HOV lane. He also showed merging in the highway and merging out of the highway, and all of it without driver intervention. Only thing was canceling a lane change at one point because he didn't feel like he had to, but he still didn't. He just changed the decision making. It didn't actually affect the driving of the car, so there was no intervention of driving. I think it shows, it was the first time that it was like that for his commute, so that definitely show improvement for that specific case. based on my own experience and watching the video, I also think that it shows good improvement in general. The guy in particular said that it proved that Tesla achieved level 3 autonomy. That I disagree with, though, because level 3 autonomy, by definition, is fully autonomous, but the driver is the backup system, basically, and needs to be ready to take control if asked to. So to really call yourself a level 3 autonomous system, you need to be ready to tell the driver not to pay attention and just pay attention and be ready to take control when asked to. And that's not what Tesla is doing right now. So you cannot, just because of that, you cannot call it level 3 on its own. And I don't think Tesla will do that at the release of the wide release or anything like that. I think they will still very much tell driver to still pay attention. So not a level 3 system. Where are we at now? All right. Model S played. That was announced last week, but we are starting to get a little bit more information about it now. Elon said that it's going to come in October, November 2020. He also said that he clarified what he said last week about the 7-seater thing that I think we talked about it on the podcast. We weren't sure if it meant actual rear-facing seat or a real third row. I thought it was going to be a third row because I thought it'd be like deceiving to call it the 7-seater. Normally they said the 5+2. That's too surprising. It was deceiving. It is a 5+2 seat, though Elon argued that it will accommodate larger passenger. So I don't know if that means adults, but they're going to be larger. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know how you would fit a third row for adults in there. I mean, it does, you know, he does make it sound like it's going to be bigger. So I think maybe you could have the seats a little lower. But like for me, like just even getting my kids in there, it was like kind of a snug fit. My older son, when we sold our Model S, was kind of like 3 inches away from the glass. Like his face was like, you know, so if we accelerated fast, he would like his head would hit the glass. So
it was not. You're not supposed to accelerate fast when you have your kids in the back.
Yeah, I mean, you're not that fast, but point being, you know, like if you got to pull out fast in front of somebody's coming quick or whatever. But point being is that even with kids, even like with a really well designed car, it was pretty tough to fit a third row in a Model S. I don't think they're going to be able to fit. I mean, they might be able to optimize a little bit, maybe make the seats lower, maybe the second row moves up a little bit, things like that. But I don't think like adults are going to be comfortable in that rear seat, and that they kind of said as much.
Yeah. All right. Tesla also said that, we reported early in the week that based on a witness from a German magazine, that the one of the Tesla Model S prototypes, the plate prototypes in Nürburgring, achieve a 7.23 time on the ring. That would be about 20 seconds faster than the Porsche taken time that we speculated that Tesla was trying to beat with their testing at the ring. Now, yesterday. Yeah, yesterday, Tesla confirmed that, well, the way they said it was weird a bit. They said that they confirmed that they can achieve a 720 time with the Model S based on their testing, and they did release like a lab testing on the track. I think they cannot say that they achieved it because the times are not official. Like, you need an official time slot to achieve a record attempt. And you need to have the time... you need to have the track to yourself. You cannot have traffic on the track and everything like that. So that's probably it, especially since a third party apparently witnessed this doing the time. So I think it's pretty fair now that they achieved it. But they say that they could come back. They're going to make some improvement to the plate powertrain on the Model S, which is, of course, like the three-motor powertrain that Tesla first was supposed to introduce in the Roadster. Now it sounds like it's going to come to the Model S first. And they're going to come back to Nürburgring next month and they think they can achieve a 705 time, which would be pretty insane.
What's the all-time record on the ring?
642, I think. I remember something like that.
Okay, so we're approaching the all-time record.
Yeah.
And that's with like a crazy Porsche, right? Isn't it like a decked out?
Well, it was still, we're talking about production time, production car time. I'm sure like with some special race car thing, they have a way better time. But for production time, it was 640. But yeah, it was also a limited production car, I think. It wasn't like a Honda Corolla or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. So after that, Elon also said, he said that when he said that the Model S plate is coming in 2020, October, November, and he said that the plate powertrain is going to be first to do the Model S. After, we'll come to Model X and the new Roadster. So that basically confirmed the push to 2021 for the new Roadster. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about that for a while. Elon said it's not a priority anymore. It was first supposed to come in 2020. And 2021, it was most likely right now.
I mean, everybody who follows along didn't really expect 2020 to...
Yeah, we saw it coming for sure. It's still a disappointing thing to me because, well, of course, I'm biased. I'm supposed to have the car, so I want it like tomorrow if I could. So yeah, I'm disappointed for it personally, but I'm more disappointed for two reasons. If you've put the money down yourself, Tesla was requesting for the Founder Series, and they said the Founder Series like going to be the one delivered first, so some people put the full $250,000 to get the car first with the Founder Series, and now they're told that, oh, it's not a priority anymore. It's going to come later. Sorry.
By the way, thanks for the cash.
Yeah, I'd be pissed about that because, I mean, people are always saying, like when Tesla was late with the $2,000 or $5,000 deposit that you needed to put back then on the Model S, it's not that big of a deal. You're going to be a year late. It's a few dozen bucks in interest or something that you're losing, really. That's all you're losing unless you actually need the cash. But then if you need the cash, why are you putting down the cash? But for the Roadster, it's different. Now we're talking about thousands of dollars of interest that you're losing that you're putting in Tesla's pocket.
Yeah,
of
course. They could, if you can put the market or something.
Yeah. And if you can put the $250,000 down on the car, of course, you probably don't need those few thousand bucks, but still, it's still a bummer. And the other reason when I'm pissed off about it, well, not pissed off, I'm disappointed really, is that Tesla used the Roadster as a big incentive program for sales. So, like, they already got that value out of the cars. See, a bunch of people are saying, oh, you guys got the cars for free and whatnot. Like, we did some work at the cars. We did help sell cars and everything like that. Hundreds of them.
Like, yeah, actually, my town has like 20 Teslas now.
Yeah. And overall, of course, a lot more also online and whatnot. And not just us, a bunch of other people too. And you could argue that it wasn't a time when Tesla actually needed those demand. It needed to create that demand, and it basically saved the company to be able to make that program, that incentive program. And Tesla already saw the value for that, because I don't know about you, but if I look at my referrals, they're all delivered by now for that time at least. So Tesla saw the value in it, and now they have that basically account payable. They have this liability on their balance sheet right now, which is we have to fulfill the deal that we made for people to help us create demand and get the car in return. And now they're just delaying paying that debt, if you will. So not that we are the most aggressive creditors at Tesla has right now. I'm sure there are some banks out there and some vendors at Tesla as a priority that they have over priority over a bunch of owners like us. But I think it's a thing to keep in mind nonetheless.
I mean, why do you think? So this kind of raises a bigger question, and like, why is Tesla always in? Like, it kind of feels like they're always in critical, like, almost near death mode. why can't they, like, you figured when they launched the Model 3, lots of them are selling, they could kind of take a step back, take it easy. It kind of feels like Elon runs his company by the shirt, you know, the seat of their pants mm-hmm. at all times. It always has to be like within, you know, it always has to be like the comeback story. It can't be like, all right, we're a normal company now. We're going to do normal company things. Like,
but I think they are more right now. Profit. I think they made the switch last quarter when they raised the money and everything.
Okay.
So, I will venture to say that I think you're right. I think what you said was right. And I think they were on the verge of when there was the layoff earlier this year, I think there was a massive cash crunch and they were on the verge of dying. And Elon himself admitted that Tesla was on the verge of dying like half a dozen times before that too. So what you said is definitely fair. But with the money they raised earlier this year, last quarter, they were what, like 4 or 5 billion cash they had?
Yeah, they were fine. They had enough.
Yeah. And going forward, I don't think they will lose. They might still lose some money, but not too much money. And they had a big investment. Well, they did borrow a ton of money for the Gigafactory 3. But once it comes online, Gigafactory will pay for itself fast. Right. That I guarantee you. It will pay for itself very fast. And so
unless
once
there's
that,
like a global recession and China.
Yeah, definitely. There's some other factors. Yeah, that definitely there's some outside factors that can affect here. But that plus, I think, was the right move too with the Model Y to build in Fremont, build it with low capital expenditures. So next year, I think we'll see a turnaround and Tesla start to make some money. And I don't think they can lose like $4 billion until then. So we should be fine.
So once Tesla starts making money and their, you know, profits quarter over quarter, and they start theoretically behaving more like a company that's safe and secure and whatever, do you think that things like pushing a car out for a year and, you know, holding everybody's, do you think that people will be more or less likely to forgive them for that? Because right now, people seem to be okay with, my Roadster deposit is another year late. You know, I'm not getting my Roadster after the time that they said I would. Doesn't seem like a big uproar over that. But like if Tesla was making a big profit and they had, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, I think the perception will change if that happens. And people will be less forgiving for sure. Yeah, and when you're turning in billions of that's where people are pissed off at Ford or pissed off at GM when you do layoff and everything like that, because they are profitable companies. Well, there's of course, well, not in Ford's case, but there's of course the bailout things that is still an issue for people. But when the company is profitable and then they prioritize, of course, the shareholders over the customers, over the employees. It's not a good look. Now, of course, Tesla is not there yet. It's not a profitable company. It's still like you said, they were in survival mode for a long time. But will that mean that there won't be any delays going forward? That's not what I'm saying. I mean, vehicles, programs. I mean, even legacy automakers have delays in their programs. So, right. Maybe not as regularly as Tesla, but anyway, we'll see. So now Tesla basically made Nürburgring in their home. Now they install a supercharger at the location. It looked like a temporary supercharger to me, like the ones that you can just carry around on a skid.
Yeah, installed. With like a lift. Installed is a strong word for this.
But then I asked Tesla on Twitter, and they said, when I asked if it's a temporary one, they said, nope, it's a permanent one. Though I did hear after that from a source familiar with the matter, that while it's not, it's a permanent one, and it's going to be just used for them, for their testing. I don't think it's going to be available to the public or anything like that. Even if you do on one of those public days, you can bring your own car to track and everything. I don't think you're going to use that. However, I did hear from the same source that Tesla is planning to build one outside of the track for the public. So that's nice. Because otherwise, I think the closest supercharger is like 50 kilometers away or something like that.
Interesting. I do see wet cement, or it looks like wet cement underneath there. So at least there's, you know, some underground wiring.
Mm-hmm.
It's not it's not so bespoke that they just like plopped it down there.
Mm-hmm.
But that platform it's on, it looks like plastic, or it looks like very temporary.
Yeah, it looks like the ones that they bring when a permanent supercharger has a problem or something, and they just bring that and they run it with a diesel generator or something. It looks like that.
About those is that they are probably the U.S. supercharger, because all the cars that are coming over to test, you know, that Tesla is testing, probably have the U.S. plugs.
That's a good point. Yeah. No one is surprising.
That's why. Although, I don't know. When I look at it, it kind of looks like it has the CCS combo. But, one of them has two cables. So it must, I don't know. Anyway, I see two cables on the front far one. So it does have CCS combo on it. I don't know.
All right.
Moving on.
Hand of the quarter push. We touched on it at the beginning of the show, but now let me discuss in more detail. Last week we reported on Tesla implementing some discounts and also offer of 2 years of free supercharging. And the idea was to offer that for people when you can deliver the car by the end of the month, so that it counts for the quarter. And now we reported earlier today that Tesla changed the whole thing because there was some abuse, I heard from a source. Though it was kind of Tesla's fault, though. They did admit that they sort of miscommunicated the discount. So the discounts were, they call it deviations. So basically, if there's already an order for a car and they have a car in inventory, that is the same car except for two things different. Those two things can be the wheels, can be the paint color, can be the interior. And you can comp the two of those things, so two deviation, you can give them for free in order to deliver the car by the end of the year. So it was more of a logistical thing, like getting the inventory out instead of having to produce the new order, which would make it more difficult to deliver the car by the end of the year. However, employees apparently used it more. Employees and customers also, because customers, they read our article and they were like, hey, I want that deal. And staff authorized the deals on new car sales. And they were just, instead of matching existing order, they were placing new orders for things that they didn't necessarily have, but customers were okay with the more expensive version with those two deviations. So Elon did comment on the thing after we posted it, and then he said he was looking into it, and sure enough, a few days later, Tesla communicated back to the sales staff saying that they're not authorized to do that anymore. Instead, any kind of deviation needs to be approved by a manager now, and they're going to have an inside sale team that is going to be focusing on trying to match existing orders to those inventory cars, and they are still allowed to do that thing, but not if a new buyer requests it. Like, it's going to be instead they're going to look at the orders and they're going to look at the inventory, and even if it doesn't match, they're going to allow those free features basically for people. So if you already have an order in place, and you're not scheduled for the end of the year, the end of the quarter, I mean, to get the car, you might get a call from Tesla saying, hey, do you want this car instead? It's black instead of white, and it has 19-inch wheel instead of 18, but we're going to get you those for free if you take the car by the 30th, so something like that. And the 2 years free supercharging apparently can still be offered too, but that's not that big of a deal, really. Unless you don't have an home charging solution and you're going to rely on it to charge, then yeah, it's a big deal. You're going to have free charging for 2 years. And unless you do a lot of road tripping and long distance, then yeah, it might be worth it. But if not, that it's at 2,000 miles right now, the referral program. So if you just buy it with a referral code, which you can find online. You can, anywhere, you can ask a friend who owns a Tesla, or you can use ours, Seth and I. That 2,000 miles, for me, would last 2 years for sure. Don't know about you, but...
Yeah, we don't... I mean, we go on trips and we use it, but like every day we have... I mean, you know, we have solar and Powerwall, so we now have like really cheap home charging, almost pretty much free home charging. So,
but even if it wasn't well, it's not free, but like a cheap solar, would you like really like go to a local supercharger to get the charge out, and like you wouldn't do that?
It's not worth the time. I mean, your time is valuable, and I think Tesla's kind of banking on that. Like when they give away free supercharging, they're kind of saying, nobody's going to go to a supercharger and sit there for an hour or, you know, a half hour. It's just not worth people's time. But some people do that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Yeah, and again, where I do see an advantage for it is, and we are starting now that the Tesla has less expensive vehicles like the Model 3, we see some people that like live in condos and apartments where they cannot have a charging solution at home, that they're still willing to buy a Tesla and just use the public charging architecture, which infrastructure, which is pretty hardcore. Like it's not an ideal solution. Like home charging is what makes the EV experience great. Really, like you always wake up with a full charge. That helps a lot. But there's a lot of people that are apartment dwellers and whatnot, and that they want a Tesla. They want it hard enough that they're willing to live with public charging. Then that would be like a big deal, because for 2 years, you can just like go once a week at a supercharger, and 40 minutes later, you come back and you have a full charge. So for some people, that might be worth it. I don't know. And then for those people, the 2 years is certainly worth a lot more than the 2,000 miles.
Yep.
All right, big news. That was big news there. Rivian, Amazon, Jeff Bezos, kind of dropped the gun here and announced a new product for Rivian. He announced that they are buying 100,000 electric vans from them. It was part of his announcement for like, he's basically said that Amazon is going to follow the Paris Agreement, but 10 years early, they're going to follow the CO2 requirement of the Paris Agreement, but even faster. And part of that is going to involve adding 100,000 electric vans to their delivery fleet. And Rivian, which is, of course, partly owned by Amazon now, they made a $700 million investment in the company. So we don't know how big of a share they own. We know it's a minority share, but it has to be a significant one. 100,000 cars. So they said that on yesterday, and I contacted Rivian. I'm like, hey, what's up with that? The guys are making vans now? And they were like, yeah, it looks like it. And it did sound to me, talking to a few people at Rivian, that Amazon, they maybe weren't supposed to announce that right away. So more details are going to come out next week about the product. But Rivian did release a picture later after the announcement. So we did see like the first picture of the van here.
Yeah. And
which is a pretty big van.
I don't think they just drew that up, you know, after the announcement. Clearly they had,
no.
They had some plans.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe weren't ready for it to be announced or something, but they were definitely behind the scenes on it.
Yeah. And it's a full size delivery van, like a commercial van with a pretty significant box and very large wheelbase, and they're going to make 100,000 of them. And it's what I'm saying. It's big news. It's a significant order. I mean, I have to assume that thing's going to cost at least $40,000, even more than that. It's a big van.
It's a big van. It's going to have a big battery pack. So, I mean, think about just batteries alone. How many?
But the inside is so simple, though. Like it's a box. It's
mostly air inside.
Yeah. So that's and we see a big battery pack, and doesn't really have to be that big. They could end up making like a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack or whatnot. Right. And then it would be super expensive. But I mean, it's not a higher aerodynamic vehicle. It's going to be very efficient, but it doesn't have to be that much. It's just, it's going to be like city driving. Is it going to do 100 miles a day? Like, I don't even know if anyway.
Yeah.
Let's say $50,000 it costs. It's a $5 billion hoarder then.
Yep.
It's a massive hoarder. So now it brings me to some things we can discuss real quick. That I normally I would be a lot harsher about it if it was any other company than Rivian, because this is now their third vehicle that they announced, and they haven't delivered anything yet. So normally with an EV startup, I'm like, that's a big red flag when you keep announcing new products and you can't deliver anything. But to Rivian's defense, they had their shit together. Like they, before announcing the R1T and R1S, they already had a factory. They already were investing in modifying the factory, which was a previously producing car factory. So it was much more like a Tesla move when they bought NUMMI than, let's say, a Faraday Future or Lucid Motors. We were like, hey, we're going to build a $1 billion factory from scratch. So it seems more feasible. They did announce two vehicle programs at the same time, the R1T and the R1S, but they were both built on the same platform, so it made sense. Now, this is definitely a new platform, a whole new form factor, the delivery van, and definitely not the same product. It's a commercial product versus a consumer's vehicle, passenger vehicle. So they're definitely adding a lot to their plate here. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt so far because they've been so solid to date.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, that $700 billion that Amazon gave them is going to give them some more bandwidth.
$700 billion. $70 billion.
That's quite a...
$700 million. Yeah.
So $700 million they get from Amazon. We don't know what for when it happens, but... You know, like we could have speculated that, you know, Amazon is going to, you know, recent news came out that Amazon canceled their contract or didn't have a contract anymore with FedEx. And obviously that hurt FedEx's stock price. So what's Amazon going to do? You know, obviously they're still working with UPS and the other carriers, but eventually Amazon wants to deliver its own items. So like by partnering with Rivian, they say, all right, here's our solution. We're going to get these electric vans and we're going to use that to build our fleet. Mm-hmm. So by adding the $700 million, they now are asking Rivian to kind of veer off in another direction, probably hire quite a few other people and build this separate platform for deliveries. Now it kind of makes a lot more sense. Because mm-hmm. before it was like, well, what is Amazon doing? Why do they care about this particular thing? It doesn't really affect their business at all. So now we know.
Yeah. We anticipated something like that happening for sure. But did we anticipate something like that at that scale?
Yeah, Amazon scale.
Yeah, well, that's fair. Amazon is a huge company, but 100,000 vehicles is a lot of vehicles. They're talking about starting delivery in 2021 and completing the 100,000 delivery in 2024. Which would give them like a 25,000-30,000 cars per year. That's a lot of cars to make over a short period of time within the capacity that Rivian has. They haven't confirmed anything about if it's going to be produced at the same plant and everything like that. I would assume that they would have if it's going to start production in less than 2 years. You need to already have a plan for that. They previously mentioned about that Illinois plant, a capacity of over 200,000 units, but... keep in mind, so 200,000 units, but they have the R1S, they have the R1T.
Yep.
They have the Ford. You're supposed to supply powertrain for a Ford electric vehicle too. So some of the capacity, I assume, will have to go to that. I don't know what kind of volume. And now you had that thing to it, that the Rivian. It's a lot on their plate. So let's see how they can do with that.
But what's good about this, like on another level, is that FedEx and UPS and all the delivery companies in the world are now seeing that Amazon is going to have an electric car delivery fleet. So if they want to be able to match Amazon's ability to deliver stuff inexpensively, because electric is a lot less expensive for fleets than internal combustion, they're going to have to match. So I think this is going to be one of the things that make the other companies accelerate their electric delivery vehicle plans.
And you know that that thing's going to be fully connected to.
Oh, yeah.
Like Rivian is already working on OTA system for their trucks. So
yeah, you're going to be able to track your toothbrush like on the street. Like you're going to know what exactly your toothbrush is on and like how many minutes away.
I mean, Amazon does have that in the US though already, right? Like I haven't seen that here, but when I was living in LA, excuse me, when I was leaving in LA, sometimes I would get an alert from Amazon that I could track the truck. Like I do like a Uber Eats or something like
that. Oh, wow. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah. And it was a service like a Uber or something like that. Like it was a person delivering the package in their own car. So it was an app thing for sure. It was like a Uber, but delivery service for Amazon. Maybe they were testing that or something. GM, are they still on strike right now? No, yep. I haven't heard a deal yet. They're still on strike. 50,000 employees on strike. So that's the UAW, the United Auto Worker Union. And they're going on strike over labor issues, compensation issues, and also GM announcing the closure. Well, announcing the closure. It's a negotiation technique. Everything's a negotiation. They haven't announced closing anything, but they do the whole thing where, oh, we don't have any allocation of cars to make there. So, you don't have cars to make. You don't have job. But now we learned through Automotive News this week that they offered a deal to the UAW workers, and that that deal included keeping the Detroit Amtrak, is that a name? Amtrak assembly plant. Anyway, a big assembly plant in Detroit where they're currently making the CT6 Cadillacs and the Chevrolet Impala. I'm losing my voice here. I was sick for 2 weeks and I'm just feeling better now. I just don't want to lose my voice again. But they said that they're going to make electric pickup trucks there instead. They saying, sign the deal, our workers, and we're going to keep that plant open and make Petra pickup truck there.
Great.
Great, but like it's not like they won't make it if they don't sign a deal. Like Ford already announced the deal. Rivian is already making them. Tesla is also working on them. Like the GM has to come with electric pickup trucks, so it's going to happen. Now, is it going to be another plan as well? Are they going to go to Mexico to make it if they don't make that deal? I doubt it. Anyway, more interesting than that, part of the deal too, and so include keeping open the Lordstown plant, and they say they want to make battery cells there. That's right. What the report said.
And that's the one that they wanted to sell to Workhorse.
Yeah, that's where it was weird. So for months now, people have been talking about Workhorse buying that plant to make their own pickup trucks. But now this report said that no, GM would make battery cells there, and it wouldn't affect the cell to Workhorse. So I don't know how that works. They keep part of the plant.
Maybe they split it in half or something.
Yeah. Like I mean, it is a big plan for Workhorse, which doesn't have a lot of money.
I mean, Workhorse has to make some batteries. Maybe part of the, maybe they work out some sort of thing like GM makes the batteries, they get the plant for, whatever, and then Workhorse buys the batteries from GM, something like that. And then, GM makes some batteries for itself as well.
Yeah, maybe something like that, yeah. Or the other thing, too, is that maybe that the report got it wrong or the source got it wrong. It's not battery cells, but battery packs.
Right.
Which would make more sense to me because battery cells is a whole different business. And I haven't seen, enough commitment from GM on that front, so it would be, brand new. But not impossible either. I would like to see it happen for sure. But I think battery packs would make more sense here. Who knows?
Yeah, especially with the Workhorse component. Like Workhorse needs packs. And battery cells are, besides Tesla, kind of a commodity. So I think I don't think GM is the type of company that would try to get into a try to compete with commodity players like LG and Samsung.
Mm-hmm. All right, now let's move on to a fun thing here, the Tega. Tega Motors, we've been reporting on them for a while now. It's a fun little company based in Montreal that spun out of McGill University. A bunch of kids that were working on the electric racing university program. You know, I don't remember the name now, but North America, there's a university get together and they do electric racing cars. And that's a way to develop electric powertrain. And the three kids were working on that. And they spun out into their own company. And we reported them a bunch of time for making an electric snowmobile. A very cool, very cool product that they built from the ground up and everything. I tried it last year, was pretty impressed by it. And I think it's coming out next year now, the production version. We reported on the production spec earlier this year. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool product. Now they leveraged their development on that snowmobile to make a jet ski, jet ski-like watercraft, basically. I don't think you can say jet ski, right? Because a jet ski is a brand or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Sea-Doo is the brand.
Sea-Doo is the brand. So it is a jet ski, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
They basically leveraged the powertrain that they made for that snowmobile and packaged it into a jet ski with pretty impressive performance here. I mean, they managed to fit a 23 kilowatt hour battery pack inside that thing, which is significant for a vehicle of that size. 134 kilowatts motor can achieve a top speed of 104 kilometers an hour. That's 65 miles per hour. And that 23 kilowatt hour battery pack is apparently good for about 2 hours of fun on the lake. That might not sound like much, but I mean, it's not supposed to be an efficient vehicle. Like it demands a lot of energy to move on the water like that. And normally people use it with power too. I mean, it's not like you're cruising around normally with the jet ski. Normally it's a fun 2 hours where you're pushing the vehicle a little bit.
I'm surprised. That's a lot of weight, the battery pack. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that doesn't affect the performance of the boat.
Apparently, they managed to keep it pretty light. They were talking about like a weight to power ratio that was industry leading or something like that.
Mm.
Do they have the weight here? I posted the whole spec sheet, but
weight capacity,
ready to drive. Weight capacity, okay, that's not the same thing. 400 pounds. I mean, you can get two people on there. Beautiful machine. It looks, look at the pictures here. It looks beautiful.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not a Sea-Doo guy. I'm not a jet ski guy. So like, but to me, it looks like a beautifully made machine. I mean, the guys are legit. Like, when I met them, I'm impressed by everyone in the company. Not just like the actual powertrain, which is definitely where they focus on. The three founders were engineers working on powertrains, but they also like looked at the connectivity. The user interface looks good, and things like that. They focus on it. Now the price. That's where things get a little more difficult. They're not a massive company. They don't do volume manufacturing, so price comes with it. It started at $24,000. You can get entry price Sea-Doo for like $5,000. So big difference. However, it's a more higher performance machine here that you have. It's not like the biggest jet skis, but it's pretty high. It's ranks pretty high in terms of performance. So when you go a more performance gasoline powered jet ski, you could get into the $15,000-$20,000 range. So when you take into account the gas savings, it's not too bad. It gets closer. Now, they only plan to make 500 of them. The first hundreds would be actually $28,000, would be the Orca Founders Editions. So they're taking a similar approach as Tesla with a higher power one or here version for their series. And then they make more of them. But overall, they only plan to make 500 of them. And they plan to use that money to make cheaper watercrafts after that. They're talking about pricing below $14,000 USD, which would make a lot more sense. So it's very much like Tesla's strategy of higher spec, more expensive vehicles moving into less expensive mass market vehicles. I think there's a big opportunity in watercraft to electrify. Keep in mind also that you can use that maybe where you wouldn't be able to use gasoline jet skis. There's plenty of harbors and lakes now and the rivers that prohibits the use of gasoline-powered watercraft. So maybe you could use that instead in those places. And if you're running like a rental boat business or something like that on the lake or on a river or on the ocean or whatever, maybe that would make sense to rent something like that to your customers if you have a good charging solution, because they do have DC charging on it. I'm not sure how you would get the DC charging station though on the lake.
A lot of boat docks have 30 amp or 50 amp 125 volt, although that's not terribly fast, but it's a smaller pack.
Yeah, it would charge pretty fast on that. Yeah. So you can get a quick turnaround on it, and with no gas cost, you can get either higher profit or you can lower the price and get more customer and whatnot. So maybe for that kind of purposes, it would be a smart choice. And again, lower noise too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you've ever...
it is. It makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, it's a lot of noise.
My parents live on a lake, and when there's a jet ski around...
Yeah. So
it's not fun.
I think once these are around for a while, like, they'll definitely be the high-end choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need
the... All right, finally...
gas and stuff like that.
Yeah. Finally, good news coming out of Daimler. They said that they're going to stop developing new internal combustion engines to focus on electric cars. I mean, that's quite significant here coming from Daimler, which, of course, is the namesake of the company. Gottlieb Daimler is basically the one credited for inventing the modern gasoline engine. And now they say that they are on the last generation of it. They don't say that they're not going to sell them. They just said that now they just now released their started to release their new generation engine, like a six cylinder engine that they're introducing in a bunch of their lineup, a bunch of vehicle in their lineup. And now they say that they are not currently planning on invest in starting the development of a new generation of it, which normally they are always in some stage or another of developing a new gasoline engine. No, that won't be the case. That was based on the comment from Daimler chief of development Markus Schaefer. He did mention though that they're going to still invest in developing some parts so they could still improve on their existing engines, but no new generation of it. Instead, they said they're going to focus on new electric vehicles. Makes sense. Even when a new car that's not electric come out, I'm always thinking like, what are you guys doing? Like,
yeah, anything that comes off the assembly line. Every time I see like a car trailer full of internal combustion engines heading to a car dealer, I'm always like, why are you guys still even building these things? It makes no sense.
And you think that from that, but then it's a new level to
right
to thinking five. I don't know what the development timelines on all those things, but I would assume it's like 5, 6, 7 years. So thinking like 5, 6, 7 years in the future, we need to have that new gasoline engine come out. I mean, that's where it gets really trippy, because you guys have no idea what the market's going to be like in 5 or 6 years. It's going to be electric through the roof. It's going to be hard to sell those trucks and those gasoline powered vehicles, six cylinder engines and whatnot.
I agree.
And I mean, that next generation, just how better would it be from that current generation 6 years from now? Like, you guys need to cheat on your new diesel engines to make them work within the regulations. So, it makes sense. It makes sense. Good on Daimler making the right move here.
And especially but now, like, what I want publicizing it too. Like, they could have done it quietly, but publicizing it kind of, you know, it's a shout out to the rest of the industry. Like, hey, we're going electric, and like we're cutting off all of our internal combustion engine stuff. Big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even Elon shouted them out.
Yeah, Enoch shouted it out, and then Mercedes also responded like, yeah, something like, yeah, kudos on us. So they acknowledged it, which is nice.
I would say of all the legacy automakers, Daimler is by far the closest with Tesla because, you know, obviously they bailed them out, but just generally speaking, they seem to get along quite well.
Yeah. Elon even said that you could see a further collaboration with them in the future. And whatnot. Yeah,
Sprinter van or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll see. All right. That's it for us this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube and listening on your podcast devices. We're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.